This is number 0054, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0054. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Kevin Ladd, who is with scholarships.com. What can scholarships.com offer the budding college student?
What scholarships.com primarily does is we take away all the searching needlessly through, you know, giant books for scholarships, and we just help you find the ones that you really qualify for. And we do that by FP Creative Profile, and we have a large scholarship database full of scholarships of all kinds, kind of weird. And some aren't so weird, but they are specific to people who aren't necessarily 4.0 students or quarterback of the football team. You know, it takes about 15 or 20 minutes, and then we end up giving you a list of about, you know, anywhere from 50 to 150 scholarships, all of which you qualify for in a general way, and then it's up to you to decide which ones you best qualify for and to search out those providers and ask them, you know, how best to apply for the scholarship.
Bob Dorigo Jones is the guy behind the annual Wacky Warning Labels contest. Just how do they pick the winners every year?
Yeah, every year we weed out all the warning labels that we get from people all over North America, and we pick the five funniest ones. In the past, we would go on a radio station and let the listeners pick the winners. This year, we went on a national television program here hosted by John Stossel on Fox Business News, and we let his audience select the top three cash prize winners. So anybody in your audience who has a warning label around the house that they look at, just scratch their head and wonder why that's there. Well, if they send it to us, it could be worth $1,000.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and on this edition of Book Banter, we'll look at Dennis Palumbo's suspenseful thriller Mirror Image, and what I really think about the girl with the dragon tattoo. The suspense continues very soon on the Stuff File program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0054, was my nephew Meshach. He and his brother Malik were the two Rugrats many years ago who starred in their own Christmas show on the old radio program. They hosted the Meshach and Malik Christmas special. You may have heard it last year on this program, and here's a hint. You'll hear it again this year, too. And if you can't wait, it is archived on the site. It is show number 0018. Well, time really flies. Meshach is just about to start university this month. So thank you very much, Meshach, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Love you. Now, let's get to the stuff, shall we? We start off with a horse race. This is a horse race in New Jersey. A pair of dueling horses left an announcer at a New Jersey racetrack sounding more like a confused husband. Larry Kalmus had noticed My Wife Knows Everything and The Wife Doesn't Know both on the card for Sunday's seventh race at Monmouth Park, which is in Oceanport, but he says he didn't envision the outcome. But when the horses were both in the hunt near the end, he realized what was coming. Kalmus said he kept up the call of the two as they dueled down the stretch, deftly flicking between the tongue-twisting names. His only thought? Don't mess it up. Well, the video of that call has now gone viral on YouTube, and I've actually put the link onto my website. You can go and watch it at thestufffile.com. Just go to the What's On page for this show, which is 0054, and you'll see the whole race there. But right now, here are the last few lengths of the race in audio that you can hear for yourself. We pick it up at the half-mile pole.
Past the half-mile pole, Lady Mutata by a length and a half. Little Miss Macho is in second. After that comes My Wife Knows Everything in third. On the far outside, The Wife Doesn't Know is moving up and is now fourth and right alongside of My Wife Knows Everything. My Wife Knows Everything and The Wife Doesn't Know are moving together on the far turn, and they're coming after Lady Mutata coming to the quarter pole. Lady Mutata in front. Here come My Wife Knows Everything and The Wife Doesn't Know on the far outside. Little Miss Macho is fourth or into the stretch. Lady Mutata, My Wife Knows Everything. Center of the track, The Wife Doesn't Know. Into the final furlong, My Wife Knows Everything. The wife doesn't know. They're 1-2. Of course they are. My wife knows everything in front. To the outside, the wife doesn't know. My wife knows everything. The wife doesn't know. My wife knows everything. More than the wife doesn't know. Whew. This Tallahassee was third, and Morningside Heights was fourth.
There you go. And FYI, My Wife Knows Everything is trained by a woman, while a man trains The Wife Doesn't Know. Of course. How else would it go? Moving right along on the Stuff File program, we go to the state of Washington. It wasn't tough to identify the suspects in a break-in at a rural home at Washington State. The bare facts were right there. The Grays Harbor County Sheriff's Office says a neighbor who came to collect the mail while the owner was away surprised a man and a woman having sex on the floor. Chief Deputy Daniel Pimentel says the naked couple fled, leaving behind the camera, which had been stolen elsewhere. Pimentel said that deputies who checked the videotape recognized the couple from previous contacts. The 39-year-old woman was arrested for investigation of burglary. An arrest warrant was issued for the 31-year-old man. Just the facts. Just the bare facts. In Melbourne, Florida, a 72-year-old Florida woman was accidentally shot by her husband during a robbery drill that the couple had staged to practice how they'd respond to an intruder. Now we know how they respond to an intruder. Badly. The Brevard County Sheriff's Office said Arnold and Patricia Morris had little experience with guns, and the shooting was clearly an accident. Arnold Morris called 911 after the .380 caliber pistol fired and his wife was airlifted to a hospital for surgery. The two were fortunate to escape serious injury. Patricia Morris is expected to make a full recovery. But I have a feeling she'll never, ever let him forget it. Still with Florida, police in South Florida say a 25-year-old man went into a violent rage after losing an arm wrestling match. Police say Eric Lee Blenton drove his pickup truck across a lawn, over a mailbox, and at several people after losing. Witnesses told Fort Pierce police that he also drew a rifle and pressed the barrel against the forehead of the man who beat him. Police arrested Blanton at his home shortly afterward. He faces 4 counts of aggravated assault with a vehicle and 1 count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. You know, he could almost make the idiot of the day on this program, but no, not quite. There's a bigger one coming up later. On to Tokyo for our next story. Folks, have you ever gotten upset because your mother threw out a beloved toy from your childhood? How upset did you get? I bet you didn't get this upset. A Japanese man has admitted to burning down his family home after his mother threw away some of his favorite robot toys from the Gundam animation series. Yoshifumi Takabe, age 30 and living with his mother, said he had become suicidal after she dumped some of the robots, of which he had enough to fill 300 boxes stacked to the ceiling. The blaze on August the 9th of last year completely destroyed their 2-story wooden house, but no one was injured. The Gundam figures are like the partners I spent my life with, he reportedly said after pleading guilty in Western Kobe's district court. I wanted to die with them in the fire if they were to be thrown out. The Mobile Suit Gundam series, based on an animation TV series which started in the late 70s, is about space wars fought by gigantic robots. Now there's a guy who needs to grow up a little bit. Just a little bit, I'm saying. Maybe he needs to go off to school, even if he's 30. That's just my way of a subtle segue into our first guest on the program. So let's just get to it, shall we? College is expensive, but there are plenty of wacky ways to get that tuition money. Now, according to Kevin Ladd of scholarships.com, college aid isn't just available to academics and athletes. Other students can get funding, too, if they apply for the Stranger Scholarships. Kevin is on the line with us right now from Highland Park, Illinois. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Peter?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, there are all kinds of scholarships out there, and we'll get to some of the wacky ones in a moment, but tell us a little bit about scholarships.com to begin with.
Well, what scholarships.com primarily does is we take away all the searching needlessly through, you know, giant books for scholarships, and we just help you find the ones that you really qualify for. And we do that by asking you to create a profile, and we have a large scholarship full of a large scholarship database full of scholarships of all kinds. Like you said, some are kind of weird, and some aren't so weird, but they are specific to people who aren't necessarily 4.0 students or a quarterback of the football team. And, you know, it takes about 15 or 20 minutes, and then we end up giving you a list of about, you know, anywhere from 50 to 150 scholarships, all of which you qualify for in a general way, and then it's up to you to decide which ones you best qualify for and to, you know, search out those providers and ask them, you know, how best to apply for the scholarship.
With your knowledge in doing this and being at scholarships.com, would it be fair to say that almost everybody to a certain degree should be able to find some way of supplementing their tuition fees through either a full or partial scholarship?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's just a matter of, you know, well, one thing, you know, following the rules to the letter and making sure that when a scholarship provider lays out the directions, the instructions on how to apply, that you make sure that you, you know, for example, send in, like, your transcripts if they ask for it. You know, make sure that you, if they ask for references, that you follow the directions on what kind of references to send in. You have to be willing to do the work, and it is a little bit of work to do, but you know, it's worth it if you end up getting even a few $1,000s towards your tuition.
Tell us about the history of scholarships.com. How did it come to be? Was it a situation where you guys found a need, or was it from personal experience in searching for scholarships back in the day yourself?
Well, yeah, certainly back when I was searching for scholarships, there wasn't anything like this. Of course, there was no graphical internet back then either. So, yeah, you know, one of the toughest things about the actual finding a scholarship that you have a chance of getting is just pouring through the indices of all these giant books. And, you know, we certainly recognize the need of, you know, some sort of search tool. And there's no reason why, you know, given the technology we have today, why people can't just go and you know, fill out a profile and just get matched, you know, with an algorithm and a search engine.
I'm sure students or potential students are very, very grateful for your website, scholarships.com. Are academic institutions also grateful for your existence?
Oh, yeah, I think so. You know, there's a lot of, actually, we speak to a lot of college counselors at conferences and stuff, like NACAC conference, for example. And they will tell us that they're grateful to have a place to send kids after they have given them the whole financial aid package that they can give them institutionally. You know, they'll show them a package of scholarships and grants, and then also, I guess, loans that complete their package for that school. And the kids sometimes still might need, you know, $5,000 to actually be able to afford to go to their school. And, you know, they really obviously want them to be able to do this and be able to go to their school. So they just say, you know, they send them our way and say, hey, see what are the scholarships you can find that we aren't able to offer you, and, you know, maybe that'll make up the difference. And so, yeah, I do think the institutions do appreciate having a service like ours to help students find other scholarships outside of the institution.
So, as I said in the introduction, there are some really offbeat ones out there. For instance, I understand Loyola Marymount University offers a Zolt scholarship to anyone whose last name is Zolt.
Well, it's actually, I think that was maybe misconstrued. It's actually Loyola, the college one, the Chicago one.
Okay.
It's not Loyola Marymount. But yes, they do have a scholarship for people named Zolt, Z-O-L-P. That might be one of the few that actually doesn't get awarded every year, because you actually can't, you know, just change your name to Zolt. Obviously, they thought of that loophole, and has to show on your birth certificate that your given name is Zolt.
Well, how does something like that even come to be? Do you go into the origins of some of these scholarships?
Well, that one in particular, I believe, came about because somebody whose name actually was Zolt wanted to, you know, offer a scholarship to anyone, any of their offspring or their offspring's offspring, you know, down through the ages that would have, you know, the desire to go to school and wanted them to go to Loyola, probably. So I think, you know, generally, I think scholarships oftentimes can be a way for people to help people who are like-minded, have like interests, or, you know, even a familial relation that they want to help their family, even if it's generations down the road. So, you know, possibly this was a few generations ago that someone established a scholarship, and I honestly don't know anyone named Zolt. I don't know if you do, but if you do, let them know about the scholarship and tell them that they feel like going to school in Chicago. It's a great school.
I actually do, so I'll check into that.
Do you really? Okay,
yes,
great.
Yes, I do. Now, I understand that there are people who are interested in languages like Klingon can actually find scholarships.
Yeah, that's another really interesting one. And it really is, some people might just dismiss this one out of hand if they don't actually speak Klingon, and most people I know, again, don't speak Klingon, but it's actually about the study of language. So they're just using Klingon as sort of like a way to give you an example of, you know, no matter what language you're interested in studying, if you are interested in the study of language, then, you know, this scholarship is available. And if you look at the listing we have, you know, you'll see that it's not just for people who can speak Klingon. Mm.
And since you were talking about Star Trek here, I'll use a Star Trek famous word, and that is, even though there are some frivolous, or what some people might see on the surface as frivolous scholarships, the reality is everything, to a certain degree, is studied and therefore is not necessarily illogical.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, if someone can find a scholarship for something they're interested in, regardless of how, you know, odd it might be, I don't know if I would consider any scholarship frivolous, because if someone wants to give someone money for you know, having an interest that they've decided is meritorious of a award, then great. You know, why would anyone have a problem with that?
Exactly. Now, do people who are using your website, scholarships.com, are they, first of all, only Americans? Are they only looking at American scholarships? Can outsiders who plan to go to school in America use your website?
Absolutely, yeah. The scholarships that we list are, you know, for students planning to study in the U.S., but certainly not all of them, and certainly I don't even know if the majority of them require citizenship in the United States. So people from, you know, Canada is a good example because it's a bordering country, and a lot of people will come down here to study. And people from overseas, you know, if they're planning to study in the United States, there's a lot of scholarships that are in our database that don't require that you're a U.S. citizen.
Now, in the realm of what some people might consider an odd scholarship, what would you consider yourself to be one of the most out there ones you've come across in the last little while?
Well, that's a good question. You know, there's so many. I think the one, the candy technology scholarship is a pretty interesting one. Maybe it just interests me because I like sugar. But it's a $5,000 scholarship, which is, you know, it's pretty considerably sized scholarship, and you really just have to, you know, be in college already, which also makes it interesting because a lot of them are aimed at high school seniors, and then have an interest in confectionery technology. So I'm going to go ahead and assume that though many of us might like candy, not really that many of us are going to be studying confectionery technology. So it sort of narrows the pool a lot, and you feel like if for whatever reason that is your field of study that you desire, then you probably have a good shot at getting this one because it's probably not going to be a ton of competition.
And as you mentioned, there are some out there that are for people who are actually in college. So even if somebody has already started college, it doesn't hurt to check out scholarships.com, correct?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, you know, like I said, it doesn't take a ton of time to do the search. And those who have done a search, you know, when they were a senior and they're now a freshman in college or a sophomore in college, et cetera, they should definitely come back because we're adding scholarships all the time. And they might also qualify for new scholarships based on any change in their status. You know, maybe they have, you know, maybe they changed majors. Maybe they might get more regional scholarships based on where they're going to school now. There's any number of reasons. Their GPA might be higher. Any number of things that might have changed. So they should always definitely check back with us. But we, you know, like I said, every day are adding new scholarships to the database that they might qualify for now that they didn't qualify for before. And not the least of which might be scholarships that are specifically aimed towards people who are now undergraduate students. So, yeah, you know, we definitely see that people want to give scholarships to high school seniors and don't always offer one that renews. And so people, when they get to be a college freshman and sophomore, they still need money for school, to stay in school. And there are definitely some out there that, you know, that are aimed at just undergraduate students.
Well, we've talked about some of the lighter ones that are out there, but on a more serious note, I think this is such a valuable tool that people can use. And I urge most students, if not all students, to take a look at the website at the very least. It's scholarships.com. And I thank you very, very much, Kevin, for sharing this information with us.
That's my pleasure. Thank you, Peter.
Kevin Ladd of scholarships.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0054, and you'll find the links to their website.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the comic book. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about wacky warning labels. They have a contest every year, you know. And we have another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. Plus, we'll also introduce you to the first episode of Let's Be Fair, which has something to do with the wacky warning labels. More on that in a moment. But right now, more stuff right here. And don't forget, by the way, Idiot of the Day coming up a little later on. Adam Hernandez, age 15, a freshman of Shorewood, Wisconsin High School, was arrested, handcuffed, and booked on a charge of theft after a friend let him have his lunch. The friend was part of a free lunch program and Hernandez wasn't, so eating the $2.60 chicken nugget meal was stealing, school officials said, and they called police. They called police. But Police Chief David Banaszynski finally decided to drop the charges just before the boy went to trial. The school principal agreed with the decision. It shouldn't have gone this far, Banaszynski said. There are other means and methods to handle this kind of situation. When asked whether his officer should have made the arrest in the first place, Banaszynski said the arrest was perhaps a bit over the top. But there's more than one side to the story. Right. There's the ridiculous side. And then there is the outrageous side. I don't know. And on a more serious note, think of the psychological effect this whole thing will have on that 15-year-old, Adam Hernandez. I mean, he's basically hauled into jail because a friend gave him a nugget. Wow. Okay, let's move on to somebody who should be locked up. A teacher at a school for the blind in Japan has been arrested for allegedly stealing a woman's underpants from a laundromat while dressed in a miniskirt and wearing a blonde wig. Wow, good thing his students can't actually see him. Police later confiscated some 150 female garments, including more underwear and knee-high boots, from the home of Tsuyoshi Hirano, age 43, a teacher at the prefectural school for the visually impaired. The victim, a 22-year-old woman, realized her underpants were missing from a drying tumbler in a coin laundromat in Fukuoka, Western Japan. When she saw Hirano get into a car parked outside, she reported the license plate number to police. At first glance, I knew she was a he, she reportedly told the police. The man was arrested on suspicion of theft. Meanwhile, here's a family who really enjoy doing things together. In Hopewell, New York, police stopped a vehicle at a DUI checkpoint after observing marijuana paraphernalia inside. The vehicle was occupied by two 18-year-old boys and two 15-year-old girls. Parents of all four teens were called to pick up their children, but the 46-year-old mother of one of the girls was observed to be intoxicated upon her arrival, so they stopped her and charged her with DUI. In the meantime, the teenager was released to another adult at the scene, and police called her dad. 2 hours later, he drove through the same checkpoint, and guess what? He was drunk too, so he was arrested as well. Good times, good times. Family values, that's what I always say. Okay, the manager of a Waffle House in Springfield, Missouri, says three women came into the restaurant at about 6:15 a.m., dined, and then ran when they were handed the bill for $39.31. When the manager called police, he said he had the lead to the women's identities. Two of them had left their purses behind when they ran, and he had locked them in his office. Before police arrived, the manager says one of the women returned and demanded he turn the purses over to her, but he refused. Police didn't release the identities of the women, but noted both purses contained paycheck stubs. The suspects are apparently employed at another Waffle House. Couldn't they just go to the place they worked and dine for free? I mean, really. Anyway. Okay, moving right along. After being pulled over by police in Geelong, Victoria, Australia, an officer asked Elish D'Avalon, age 40, for her driver's license. D'Avalon said she didn't have one because, and this is a quote, "I'm a being from another world and I don't require one. Your laws and penalties don't apply to me. I'm not accepting them. I'm sorry. I must go. Thank you." Well, at least she's a polite alien. She rolled up her window and then drove off, which is unfortunate because the officer's arm was caught in the window. She dragged him at speeds of up to 60 kilometers before he was able to grab her keys from the ignition when she slowed down for traffic. He suffered serious injuries. D'Avalon, who also says she's a witch, pleaded guilty to recklessly causing injury, dangerous driving, driving with a suspended license, and the original charge that she was pulled over for, using a mobile phone while driving. She was sentenced to 6 months in jail, with four suspended, and fined $1,250. Her sentencing, by the way, the hearing took place on Friday the 13th. Wait a minute. Aliens use cell phones? Who knew? Okay, and finally in this section of the Stuff File program news with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we go to Los Angeles. A Labrador that ate a beehive containing pesticides and thousands of dead bees won an award that recognized the most unusual pet health insurance claim in the United States. Ellie, who fully recovered from her encounter with the beehive in Southern California, beat out a border collie that ran through a window to get at a mailman, and a terrier that bit a chainsaw. She won a bronze trophy in the shape of a ham, a basket of toys, and doggy treats. The winner was announced by the Veterinary Pet Insurance Company, or VPI, and selected from a dozen pets nationwide. Ellie may be a young dog, but she's already managed to eat everything from wooden toy train tracks to laptop computer keys, said the VPI. So the beehive in the backyard was just another culinary adventure for this insatiable pooch. I'm glad that with all the trouble these people are going through with their dogs, that none of them, for any particular reason, decided that they had the urge to sue someone over what their dogs ate. Because, as you know, the United States is a very litigious society. Which brings us to our next guest. Subtle segue alert. There you go. The weird winners were announced in July for the 13th annual Wacky Warning Labels Contest, which proves just how far companies will go to avoid being sued by consumers for stupid mishaps. The annual contest is hosted by Bob Dorigo Jones, radio host and author of Remove the Child Before Folding, 101 Stupidest, Silliest, Wackiest Warning Labels Ever, which is published by Grand Central Publishing. He's on the line with us right now. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Peter. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to have you on the program with us. So every year you do this, and the old radio show, we used to have you on annually to talk about the odd and wacky warning labels, and each year new ones come out. Does it surprise you that they still come out 13 years later, or did you think at some point these would kind of die out because of embarrassment?
It actually does surprise me. That's a good question, because I thought, how many wacky warning labels can there be in the world? But unfortunately, there's never any shortage for lawsuits, and it's the lawsuits against the companies that make products that lead to these warning labels, and that's why we keep seeing all these ridiculous and common sense warning labels.
Now, each year you come out with a list. Is it a top 10, or how do you do it?
Yeah, every year we weed out all the warning labels that we get from people all over North America, and we pick the five funniest ones. And in the past, we would go on a radio station and let the listeners pick the winners. This year, we went on a national television program here hosted by John Stossel on Fox Business News, and we let his audience select the top three cash prize winners. So anybody in your audience who has a warning label around the house that they look at and just scratch their head and wonder why that's there, well, if they send it to us, it could be worth $1,000.
Now, I have here the list of, I have just the top two, and I actually find number two funnier than number one, so I'll start with that one first. It's the Razor Motorized Go-Kart, which the warning label says, and I still can't believe this, this product moves when used.
Imagine that. I think the first clue was go-kart, right? I thought that was the funniest one myself, and Peter, and John Stossel is shown in a video in his program driving down 47th Street in New York on this little go-kart. And of course it moves. I mean, that's what it's supposed to do. But I'm sure this company has been sued by people who have wanted to try to strike it rich in the lawsuit lottery. And when you get sued enough times, you start putting crazy warning labels like this product moves when used on your products.
Okay, so let's examine this particular case. What's the difference between this company having this warning label and not having this warning label? How can this simple sentence, this product moves when used, prevent them from being sued?
Well, whenever somebody's injured and a lawyer, sometimes lawyers will call them if they hear they've been injured. Usually that happens in car crashes that make the newspapers or television. But when a lawyer sues a company who makes a product, let's say there's a fishing lure manufacturer right here in Detroit, Michigan, where I live. It's made fishing lures for 100 years, but their fishing lure now says, warning, this product moves when, warning, harmful if swallowed. Getting my warning labels mixed up there. There's so many of them. So imagine that. You got a 4-inch fishing lure that says it's harmful if swallowed. The lawyer told them to put that on because if they didn't, the lawsuit can say you failed to warn us. It's always this legal jargon that lawyers use that the failure to warn opens up somebody to a lawsuit, even if it's common sense and obvious. So that's why we see all kinds of warning labels now.
Well, even though, as you say, it is common sense and obvious, where are the judges, or are the judges' hands tied in being able to say, this is frivolous, I'm throwing it out, it's not even getting to court?
Well, that's what we are trying to point out, and I'm glad you raised that point, because judges really are not doing their jobs when they allow these lawsuits to move forward. Judges are supposed to be the gatekeepers to anybody who has a legitimate injury. So if you have an injury, you want to be able to go to court, and if somebody caused you injury or harm, you sue them. But when you cause yourself injury or something happens that's beyond the control of somebody who made a product or provided a service, then the judge is supposed to say, no, you can't waste our time and somebody else's resources defending to make them defend themselves against a frivolous lawsuit. So bottom line is that when people elect judges, and many people around North America have the opportunity to elect judges, they need to find out if the judge wants to crack down on these types of frivolous lawsuits, or if they're supported by the types of plaintiffs' lawyers who make millions off filing lawsuits like the ones that lead to these warning labels. So it is really, it comes down to the judge. There's a role for legislators when they make the laws that crack down on lawsuit abuse, but between the judges and the lawmakers and you and me and everybody else who's potentially called to be on a jury, I'd like to point out that the juries have a big role in restoring the common sense and personal responsibility I think that we'd all like to see. There was a case recently that I think a lot of your listeners would really be surprised to hear about. Have you ever seen a table saw that will stop instantly if it touches skin?
Yes.
It's an amazing product. It truly, I don't know if you agree, but I think it's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. It has a very hard time making it to the market, and you find it sold in very few places in North America or anywhere in the world because retailers are so afraid that they'll be sued if it doesn't work just once that they refuse to sell it. So what's happening is literally over 100,000 people a year around just in North America lose fingers or hands in table saw accidents because of the fear of lawsuits has taken this wonderful product off the market in so many places. Somebody did sue when they cut off their finger when they were using an old-fashioned table saw, and they sued the manufacturer of the old-fashioned table saw, claiming that they should have had this new technology, even though the saw was working properly and was safe when used as the directions said it would be used, should be used. But a jury awarded that man $1.5 million for suing a company that made a product that was safe when used properly.
Wow. So I alluded to earlier the second place winner when I mentioned the one about the go-kart. So I should bring up the first place winner, which is Jabra Drive and Talk speakerphone, which states, never operate your speakerphone while driving. So what's the point of the product then?
Right, exactly. I mean, here you have something that was designed to make it safer to drive and talk on your cell phone. We all know that that's a big issue nowadays. We've got government officials telling us never talk on your cell phone while you're driving. So here's a company that's proposed a solution. They've got a speakerphone that attaches to your visor, and when you use it properly, it's great. It allows you to drive more safely. But they're so afraid of being sued because there have been so many lawsuits against cell phone makers and any products associated with cell phones that they put on this ridiculous warning label. But if they don't, again, somebody could get in an accident and say, well, you didn't warn me not to use this while I was driving.
Now, you award these prizes every year. This is the 13th year, as you've mentioned. Do you hear from the companies who are the winners?
Sometimes we do. Most often we don't. And I really wish we would hear from them more often than we do, because they can tell the stories about why these lawsuits or why these warning labels are put there and how much it costs you and me. Because that's the bottom line, is if you live in the United States, an average American pays about $1,900 a year more in everything from what they purchase, like cars or clothing, to medical services, because of all the lawsuits we have in our society. A lot more than anybody in Canada or Europe pays because of these lawsuits. So we try to get the companies to talk about them. Sometimes they do, but they're so afraid of being sued by people that hear about these lawsuits, the copycat lawsuits, that rarely will they talk about it. The other thing, too, is a lot of people don't realize that while the money is a huge issue, it's the aggravation that somebody has to experience when they're sued that really is the big problem that most of these, the time away from work that somebody has to take to go to court to defend themselves against a lawsuit. So the CEOs of companies, the entrepreneurs, the doctors who are sued, they just want to forget about these lawsuits as soon as they happen and or as soon as they're over, and often just don't want to talk about it anymore.
Well, we have just about a minute. I just want to get a couple of things. You have a blog that people can go to and find that information, but you've also got a Radio Minute.
Yes, it's called Let's Be Fair, talking about all the different ways that we're affected by living in the most lawsuit-happy culture on Earth. It's sponsored by the Foundation for Fair Civil Justice, which has now taken over sponsorship of the annual Wacky Warning Label Contest. And people can hear these Let's Be Fair Minute radio segments by going to my blog, and that is BobDorigoJones.com. And they can see our take on different issues that affect them in their daily lives, hear the radio spots. They can actually see a video where we demonstrate all the products that we didn't talk about today on the in the Wacky Warning Label Contest.
Excellent. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Bob, and thank you for doing what you do, and thank you for being on the program with us once again.
Thanks. It's always nice talking with you too, Peter.
Bob DiRigo-Jones, radio host and author of Remove the Child Before Folding, 101 Stupidest, Silliest, Wackiest Warning Labels Ever, published by Grand Central Publishing. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0054, and you'll find links to Bob's website. And coming up right now, the first of many of the one-minute segments will air that Bob mentioned, called Let's Be Fair. Coming up right now, you're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones. The warning was clear. Fasten your seatbelts. This summer, we took a family trip around the Grand Canyon. I knew it might get hazardous at times, but a ride we took on our first day surprised me. Before we set out for the rugged country, we took a gondola boat ride in Las Vegas. A hotel there offers rides like the ones in Venice, Italy, so we thought it would be a nice relaxing way to start our trip. But as soon as we sat down, the Italian gondolier told us to fasten our seatbelts. I asked him if the canal had any rapids, but he just laughed and said no. Some crazy turns then? But again, he said no. So why do we need seatbelts? And without any hesitation, he said, "This is America, land of the free, and home of the personal injury lawyer." Ouch. But let's be fair, we all know he's right. Because of our lawsuit-happy culture, many Americans live in fear of the next lawsuit. And even our Italian-born gondolier knows that. Maybe you have a story about how lawsuits are changing America. If so, I'd like to hear. Share your story with me at bobdericojones.com.
What are they saying about if the rains don't cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Abidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, we do have indeed another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. How you doing, Stu?
Well, I'm okay, Peter. How about you?
Just tickety-boo.
Can't argue with that.
Okay. So what do you have for us this week?
Well, I think we got a mystery, a psychological mystery called Mirror Image by Dennis Palumbo.
Ah.
Now, it seems that if you're put into a difficult situation where your life or someone else's is on the line, you can instantly become a detective, no matter what your profession is, whether you're a doctor, teacher, writer, or even a psychologist. And that's the latter profession, which is central to the plot of Dennis Palumbo's mystery thriller Mirror Image. The novel focuses on Dr. Daniel Rinaldi. He's a psychologist based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who also acts as a consultant to the city's police department and specializes in dealing with patients who are victims of violent crimes. Now, one of them is Kevin Merrick, a college student who is himself a victim of an armed assault. Now, Kevin has another peculiarity that Dr. Rinaldi finds quite disturbing. It seems that Kevin, you know, has such a degree of admiration for the doctor that he likes to dress himself exactly like Rinaldi, as well as adopt all of his mannerisms, practically like a living mirror image of Dr. Rinaldi. And this proves to be Merrick's undoing, as one night he is brutally murdered while wearing one of Dr. Rinaldi's jackets. Now, the good doctor thinks that maybe poor Kevin was mistaken for him and that he was to be the actual murder victim. Now, through some diligent investigating, he finds out that Kevin Merrick is actually Kevin Wingfield, the disowned son of a multimillionaire who made his fortune in the biotech industry. And the situation doesn't get any better for our protagonist, as he continues to receive a series of death threats, one more violent and gory than the other. Now, as he continues his investigation into the sad short life of Kevin Wingfield, he discovers that the Wingfield family possesses not only a great deal of financial wealth, but a great deal of dark secrets that damage not only Kevin, but also his long-lost twin sister. Now, this is a race against time to see, well, Dr. Rinaldi will see that the murder of Kevin Merrick Wingfield is just another tragic case of mistaken identity. Now, Dennis Palumbo, he's a veteran Hollywood screenwriter, mystery short story writer, and a licensed psychotherapist by trade, has effectively pooled all of his professional knowledge and writing talents in what is his first full-length mystery novel. He combines all these elements into a novel that is fast-paced, breathlessly enthralling, and it's filled with so many plot twists and turns that brings everything to a satisfying yet surprising conclusion. And he brings an Alfred Hitchcock-style angle to the story, like, for example, the innocent man unwillingly entangled in a murder plot, and the police being portrayed as rather cold, heartless, and buffoonish. And that keeps the reader hooked and curious to see how the whole topsy-turvy situation will finally end. Now, Mirror Image is a book that will certainly satisfy mystery fans, which offers everything that the ideal mystery novel should have. So Dennis Palumbo certainly likes mystery, and it shows quite vividly in Mirror Image, no matter who is the victim, who gets involved, or who solves the crime. So that's Mirror Image by Dennis Palumbo. It's published by Poison Pen Press, and it's $28.95.
And we've had Dennis on the program a couple of times, and he's excited about putting this book together. I know we spoke to him about it. And apparently, he's hoping, and we hope, we wish him well, this will become a series. It's the first in what is hopefully a line of Daniel Rinaldi mysteries.
Well, I mean, he certainly is, if that's the case, it's a fine introduction to the series. You have to admit that. And if you like mysteries, I mean, I finally read Girl with the Dragon Tattoo by Stieg Larsson, which is a fascinating book. And you talk about psychologists and getting involved with in mysteries. There is a psychological angle in this book, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Like the title character, Elizabeth Salander, is actually a character who was judged by psychologists to be insane and a dangerous type of offender. But she's not, actually. But there is a psychological angle, and everyone's raving about this book, and it's justifiably so. It's not hype. This book will really grab you from the beginning, and there's so much involved. I mean, how she solves cases, and someone who should have been put away a long time ago is very integral to the solving of the mystery in this book, actually.
Hmm. And since you're recommending another psychological thriller, or a thriller that has a psychology bent to it, I'll recommend one too, in addition to go with Dennis Palumbo's new book, Mirror Image. You know, my other favorite medical writer is Daniel Calla, who's had several books out, and one of them is called Rage Therapy, which is a story that deals with a psychologist whose body is, he's not just murdered, his body is beaten beyond recognition. And the person who's trying to find out about this story is Dr. Joel Ashman. He's the protagonist in the book, and not only is he a fellow psychiatrist, but the victim was practically a second father to him and a mentor to him. So there's a lot of personal feelings in this particular story as well, and it's a story with a lot of interesting twists. So that's another good story that deals with a psychiatrist or psychologist.
So they only heal minds, they solve mysteries too.
So that one is called Rage Therapy by Daniel Calla, and it is available out there in paperback.
Well, and don't forget, you can read my reviews that are featured on this show and any other reviews in my column. You can see it online every week, www.westendtimes.ca.
Excellent. And now that you've finished reading Dennis Palumbo, his book, I want it back. I want my copy back. I was not finished with it.
Yes.
You left me hanging. You left me hanging.
You will have it. Be hanged no longer.
Okay. Stuart Nelman with Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program. We will get to an idiot of the day in just a matter of moments, but I've got a couple of stories that I want to share with you in the Stuff File news before we get to that point. Pennsylvania troopers are trying to figure out what happened in a crash that pitted a motorcyclist against a deer in Salem Township. Now, both the deer and the biker were dead, but the crash didn't kill the biker. When troopers lifted the bike off of him, they found the biker had a pistol and had been shot in the back of the head. "I've never seen an accident like this," said Chief Deputy Coroner Paul Sykic, who explained that the biker's injuries would have been painful but not fatal. He thought it was unlikely the biker could have shot himself in the back of the head, but ruled it a suicide anyway. A suicide? Wouldn't it be accidental shooting? I mean, I don't think this guy shot himself. I mean, the coroner doesn't think he shot himself, but couldn't the gun have gone off when the accident took place? Or, just going on the limb here, anonymous tip for the coroner, check the gun for hoof prints. Revenge of the wildlife, that's all I'm saying. Revenge of the wildlife. Anyway, would you like to know how to become a millionaire? Besides winning the lottery, of course. Turns out it's much easier to become a millionaire than you thought. All you have to do is successfully streak in front of President Barack Obama. No kidding. British billionaire Alki David, who is ranked 45th in the world's richest persons list, has offered $1 million to the first person who can pull it off. The 42-year-old businessman started the website Battlecam, which offers people thousands of dollars if they perform and videotape crazy stunts live through the website. And by the way, I'll put a link in from that site to my site so you can see the kind of things they do. That's battlecam.com. Anyway, the original offer for streaking naked in front of President Obama was $100,000. But David has raised the stakes to $1 million after being told the prize money was not enough to warrant such a daring prank. The only catch is that the person has to have the website's name scrawled across their stomach. Well, I'm wondering if there's somebody who is rather hirsute. Can they shave the website's name into their chest? Anyway, David dismissed suggestions that people would be offended by the prank and defended himself against claims he was creating a security risk for the president. He said, "I find most Americans are able to laugh at themselves. It's not as if there's any negative intentions in this. It's just a silly, outrageous prank, which is not going to hurt anyone." Yes, we've all heard that before, haven't we? Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And you know, when the Secret Service is taking you down hard on the pavement for running in front of the president, that's a road rash I don't really want. Not even for $1 million. I'm just saying. Okay, let's talk about true love, shall we? Because true love is oh so fascinating. And what's that song, Love is a Many Splendid Thing? David Birch, age 25, stepped into a business in Timmins, Ontario, Canada, and discovered his ex-wife inside. A court order prohibits him from contacting her, and she started arguing with him, but asked him to hold two bowls of poutine for her. I don't understand her at all. He dumped one of the bowls over her head, grabbed her purse, and left. When police caught up with him, they ordered him to return her purse and charged him with theft. He was sentenced to 4 months in jail. Still, Birch's lawyer says his wife would like to reconcile, providing he pays her the money he owes her. And perhaps maybe at this point, a bottle of shampoo would be a good addition to this whole situation. I don't think this wacky couple are destined to spend their lives together. Either that or their lives will be very short, one or the other. Anyway, as moronic as they are, this is not a case for Idiot of the Day. However, here is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the idiot of the day.
And this is actually a twofer. Two men arrested in Oregon for shoplifting during a shop with a cop event for school children initially thought it was a bad time for stealing, what with more than 60 uniformed officers on the scene. And you know, maybe they should have gone with their first thought. But Portland Sergeant Pete Simpson says the two gave it some more thought and decided police would be distracted, so it would be a good time to steal. They were wrong. Simpson says security watched the two young men packing their own backpacks with blenders, shoes, clothes, and tools while officers helped children pick out school supplies for the year. The two were arrested, of course. Why would two people even debate this issue, thinking that going into a store and shoplifting would be a good idea when there are 60 uniformed police officers in the same store? Why would these two clowns do this? One reason only. They're idiots.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0054. The website is thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding number, and that corresponding number again is 0054. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PA Holder and at twitter.com/PA Holder. Hope to see you back here for our next show, on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJMedia.com, and over the air on World FM 88.2 in New Zealand, and on Gold FM at 90.5 in Singapore. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.